Some Haines Assembly members question the borough lobbyist contract, and researchers interview locals for a study on Alaska Native identity. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Emily Files. Those stories and more up next. At last week's Haynesboro Assembly meeting, member Ron Jackson proposed a closer look into and possible termination of the borough's $45,000 lobbyist contract. And while the motion failed, it sparked debate that could affect future borough lobbyists. KHNS's Jillian Rogers has more.
You got to be like a duck and let the rain run off the duck's back, you know. Don't let it bother you.
That's Bill Thomas, the borough's lobbyist. His contract came under fire at the tail end of last week's meeting. The motion was brought forward by Jackson, who tried to broach the subject at a previous meeting. Thomas has already been paid $22,500, half of his yearly salary. Now that the legislative session is over, Jackson proposed looking at the possibility of ending the contract this month and spending the rest of the money elsewhere. Assemblymember Margaret Friednauer says the contract is vague and raises concerns because it doesn't specify whether that $45,000 covers only Thomas's hours during the 90-day session or year-round.
I know I don't have the same interpretation of the contract as Mr. Thomas or as maybe other assembly members, and so that's the problem. And I don't know what to do about it, or if it's just a learning moment.
The contract indeed does not specify Thomas's role throughout the year. As far as the scope of service, basically it says the work relates to government relations between the Haynesboro and the state of Alaska. It also doesn't clarify any kind of timeline. Back in December, the assembly was split on the decision to hire Thomas. Some of the same concerns arose about the lack of a detailed plan. Mayor Jan Hill broke that tie in favor of the hire. On Tuesday, Hill responded to Friednauer and Jackson, saying that Thomas has offered to lobby for the borough on a federal level throughout the year and meet with the incoming borough manager.
I don't know how many other ways I can tell you how valuable his services were this year. I know not everybody believes that, but the clearest example I have, we still have our water and sewer treatment plant money in the governor's budget, and there were people wanting that money. He has protected that. So if nothing else, I ask you to keep that in mind, that there's $1,040,000 that we would not have today if we didn't have somebody on the floor protecting it for us.
Thomas also maintains that his time in Juneau was productive and necessary.
I've told people it's not always about money, it's about policy and what you can get in the policies and help make changes. And, you know, keeping what you have in budgets are a big thing. Yes, I had told them I would go to D.C. if they go and they pay the expenses. But it was typically for session only.
At the assembly meeting, the discussion went on for nearly half an hour. It got a little heated and emotional at times. Friednauer and Jackson say their beef isn't with Thomas, but the lobbyist contract in general. Here's Jackson.
We have a contract that's really vague, really not something I would ever want to sign again if this were January next year. And so definitely I think we need to work on this. And also the scope of work in here is so vague. From now on, there's nothing he has to do except write weekly reports, because there's nothing says they stop at the end of the session.
Other assembly members chimed in and called the idea of canceling the contract now disappointing. Here's George Campbell, who phoned into the meeting.
Well, here's another situation where people voted on a contract, the contract passed, and I'm sorry, but it's without honor to try and now figure out a way to squeeze the contract in someone out of the rest of their contract after they've done the work. We all knew that the session is the main part where we wanted someone. So I'm sorry, but I think this is very bad form.
The assembly agreed that future contracts need to be fleshed out and that they should look into ways of utilizing Thomas until the end of the year when his contract expires. As for Thomas, he says he'll put in a proposal next year, but if the amount of work goes up, so does the cost.
No, nobody else is going to come in here and do it for $45,000 if you got 30 objects to get to, you know, objectives.
The motion to direct the manager to work with the borough attorney to clarify the termination clause in the contract and, if possible, end the agreement at the end of this month failed 5-1. Jackson was the only member to vote in favor. The next assembly meeting is June 7th at 6:30 p.m. Reporting in Haines, I'm Jillian Rogers.
This week's legislative budget compromise shuffled the source of some of the money that pays for the Alaska Marine Highway System. but it doesn't increase or decrease the number of routes or sailings. Ferry spokesman Jeremy Woodrow says the system will stick with its existing summer schedule, as well as a draft version for fall and winter. The funding shuffle uses more money from the state's general fund, which pays for the majority of the operating budget. Before the compromise, the ferry budget took more money from another fund. Woodrow says that's used as a backup in case of emergencies.
When there's deferred maintenance costs that are unexpected on vessels, it's good to be able to dip into that system fund and pay for those costs.
Without that money, the system would have to lay up a broken ship or ask lawmakers for additional money. Ferry officials say the budget for the fiscal year beginning in July will result in a 7% reduction in sailings. That's in addition to cuts the year before. A public hearing on the fall and winter schedule will be June 22nd. Four researchers from New Mexico and Denmark are visiting Haines and Juneau to find out more about Alaska Native identity. They're interested in what they say is a complex but understudied area of research, how Tlingit and other Alaska Native people view themselves, their culture, and their community. The identity study is funded by the National Science Foundation and supported by Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. One of the lead investigators in this identity study has a personal connection to the area. Caitlin Stern grew up in Haines.
Yeah, so I've always wanted to learn more about Native culture, and I was really excited to have the opportunity to come back to Haines and do that.
Now Stern is a fellow at the Santa Fe Institute in New Mexico. She's teamed up with another Santa Fe researcher, Vanessa Ferdinand, and two peers from the Aarhus Institute in Denmark, Jesse Barker and Juke Velthaus.
A major reason that we wanted to work with Tlingit people is that their notions of identity are so interesting and complex and not very well understood by other people, I think. So people can have their clan identity within clans. There are houses that people might identify with. There's also the layers of people's moieties, their villages.
Stern says they want to learn how all those different layers influence people's identity, how they connect with their culture, and their social behavior, how they relate to and rely on others. Here's Barker.
And we think this is a really exciting time to be kind of here and talking to Tlingit people with so much kind of effort being put in recently into kind of perpetuating Alaska Native culture with traditional knowledge camps. We're going down to Celebration next week, so we're really excited to see all the dance groups performing there.
Velthaus says this study could support programs that teach and continue traditional practices.
If we find that for half of our participants, their language, their roots are within their language and language programs, that might then inform decisions on how many resources a community gives to these language programs. Of course, it might be art, it might be something else.
Velthaus says she helped conduct a similar study in Papua New Guinea, looking at how locations influence people's identities and stress levels.
One of the things that I found was that people in more remote locations, even though they might not have the material wealth of people in more urban locations, were generally much happier and doing much better than a lot of their peers who had moved to the bigger cities.
The research team is hoping to talk to as many Alaska Native people as possible. They're expecting to hear from mostly Tlingit people, but they're also interested in Haida, Tsimshian, and other cultures. All the participants will be kept anonymous.
We are really eager to hear from everyone.
They're gathering feedback in a few ways, through an online survey, paper surveys at the Haines Library, and follow-up interviews in person. Each participant is paid $15. The team has already talked to a number of people, and the renewed interest in Native culture stands out.
This is something people are want to get, it's a message they also are keen to talk about, keen to get out there. In part, especially with the older people that I'm interviewing, that hasn't always been possible. And it feels to me that this reinvigoration is partially people's opportunity to catch up and connect, and in times also reconnect. That's something we are seeing a lot, people reconnecting with their culture and having a deep appreciation of what it has to offer.
They hope their findings won't just be interesting to read, but have practical implications for communities. To participate or learn more about the study, email alaskastudy2016@gmail.com or call 766-2943. You can find a link to the online questionnaire with this report at khns.org. For KHNS News, I'm Emily Files. Thanks for joining us this evening.